This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, radio listeners. This is your host, Howard Baum, doing my weekly reading of interesting articles from the March and April issue of Wired Magazine. The title of the article I'm going to continue with that I read started last week is called The Algorithmic Authenticity of Shaozi Chu, the CEO of the world's most influential social media company, TikTok, likes tacos, Sheryl Crow, and Diablo 4. Is he for real or a really good politician? So I'll continue from where I left off last time. The next item, they're doing an interview. This is from Wired. Let's move to the shift to longer videos. TikTok just ended the Creators program, which is how a lot of people made a living. Now it's paying only for videos over a minute. There are creators who got very, very good at making short videos, and that skill set is not as applicable now. What's your pitch to creators who are feeling like, we made this, we made you what you are, and now you've changed the rules? His response, there are a lot of users who want to see the amazing UGC, which is user-generated content, that everyone has been creating for the last 5 and 6 years. That doesn't go away. But as more and more people join, there will be a diverse demand for new things. And that's where some of our efforts in encouraging slightly longer videos come from. It doesn't take away from the existing ones, because that's the way the recommendation engine works. It just adds more to more generation integration. Next question from Wired. You're paying only for the longer videos. He says, a lot of it because longer videos require more investment in time to be created, and it is an area where it's still relatively small compared to the rest of the UGC platform. But we are always thinking of ways forward. Not everybody is here to make money, to be clear. The Wired says, of course. He says, but for those who want to explore more opportunities, we've created a whole series of things to allow people to try that. Live streaming is one of them. Wired interviewer said, right. And he said, I take, obviously, all this feedback very seriously. I'm not trying to diminish it. I'm just saying that I hear that feedback, and I think what's important for us is that we don't mistake launching a program for de-emphasis on anything else. It's not like that. The community who has always been with us, creating all the wonderful dancing and singing content, this underpins everything we are. It underpins us because it's creativity and it's joy. I cannot emphasize enough how important the base is to us and how deeply we care about giving them the best experience possible. I've met many creators, by the way, across many countries, in France, in the UK, in this country, in Indonesia, Singapore, even as far as Kazakhstan. There's always a group of users who have been there since 2017, 2018, 2019. In all our work internally, I want to assure that group that they're incredibly important to us and we are not pursuing something at the expense of them. Wired response, actually, the dancing reminds me of something. Have you seen that researchers from Alibaba have released a paper saying that they used data that had been scraped from videos of popular TikTok dances and used that information to create an engine that shows, Chu looks puzzled, Brendan parentheses, oh my gosh, you haven't seen this? He says, nope. Oh, you should see this. He says, okay. The researchers at Alibaba used a data set of scraped TikTokers doing dances and use that data to create an engine that will allow them to animate anything. These are users who have gotten big themselves, and they've given quite a lot to your platform. And now an outside actor is pulling data from your platform. He says, it's public data, though. Wired responds, it's public data, but I bet a lot of people wouldn't want their dance to be used in somebody else's data set. He says, I think it's a complex topic about how we deal with public data that's been used for somebody's private training sets. I'm paying a lot of attention to this topic. There are a lot of debates about this, as you can imagine. I don't have any immediate response to this. This is something I need to go back and look into more deeply because it's an evolving discussion. Wired says, is there some protection you can offer to users to say that the content you upload here will be used on this platform and not scraped by some third party? He says, I would need to look into that. Wired says, okay. He says, because in the past, if you publish something publicly, it's in the public domain, it's out there. Now there's a item inside the set of brackets. Note, after this conversation, a public relations staffer introduced me to TikTok's head of security and asked me to repeat what I had said about the scraping paper. He said this was the first he'd heard of it and thanked me for telling him about it. I know that our time here is limited, and the concert is going to start soon, so one more. You've had to answer a lot of criticism about your app and your practices. From your perspective, what do you think is the biggest thing that people have misunderstood about TikTok? He said, I think the biggest gap is understanding is between users and non-users. This is the biggest gap. Wired says, really? And he responds, yeah, that's the biggest gap. Every time I meet a user, I feel like the level of understanding and the conversations that we have are significantly different than with someone who's never used it before. People who use it really understand it. So I'm going on to the next item now. The title is Every Woman is an Island. Matriarchy, Money, and a Modern Mariner Named Marina. By Virginia Hefferman. Marina Hadjipateras, the dashing American venture capitalist, has only one word of derision. She speaks it softly and rarely. The word is conservative. A family can be conservative, an investment a choice. The way she uses the word, it's never political. It's also never a good thing. The first time I hear Marina deploy her tender curse is during lunch with her brother Alex on the harborside deck of Zephyrissos, a seafood restaurant in the 5th century BCE port city of Piraeus near Athens. Sophisticated. God, they're sophisticated. I keep thinking, dimly recalling a line from Fitzgerald. As platters arrive, I'm aware that I've never settled on a way to gracefully extract bones from fish. Marina, a general partner of the VC firm TMV, which she founded with the Iranian-American entrepreneur Soraya Darabi in 2016, is brooking my questions about something else. Dorian LPG, the public shipping company started by her forebears in the 19th century. At the end of 2023, the company was valued at around $1.9 billion. Its stock price shot up 141% in the past year. But it's the company's history that's most thrilling, and each version of the fairy tale I hear is more romantic than the last. Marina's background in shipping, in fact, makes the origin stories of just about every other VC frat house at Harvard, at Stanford, you don't say, look like provincial banalities. Greek shipping companies like Dorian sometimes seem to have emerged fully formed from tiny rocky islands as Athena from the head of Zeus. The tales of their genesis constitute latter-day Greek myths, whose gods have bold-faced names like Onassis and the Arcos. Hadjipateras is a less bold-faced name, but these days it's a far more valuable one. At the same time, Marina's past and patronym haven't been her calling card for a long time. At TMV, she ventures rather than hedges, and she much prefers the future to antiquity. Lately, she's been betting on new maritime technology so successfully that at 41 years old, she was named to Lloyd's 2023 list of the top 10 people in ship finance. On that list, she sits in the company of Zhu Bin of Bocom Leasing, who has more than $18 billion in vessel assets, and Akiro Futomi, president of the Japanese Levithon Sumitomo Mitsui Banking Corporation. As it turns out, it's not social media that connects us in the 21st century, it's ships. Shipping is a $14 trillion plus industry, and the overwhelming majority of the world's goods, a colossal 90% of them, spend time at sea. Marina believes that shipping is good for humans, as to trade with people around the world, as to acquire empathy for them. To see them in their places, to see what they need, what they want, it's globalization. And with the ramp-up of TMV's latest fund, it seems to me that Marina, in her steel bougainvillea way, is currently orchestrating a one-woman overhaul of the entire shipping industry. When she was 11, Marina, whose family had recently moved from London to Connecticut, was on a summer-long holiday at sea with her siblings, her cousins, her grandmother, and her grandmother's longtime companion, a woman the kids called Rula. This is the part of Marina's story I can't stop thinking about. The family never owned pleasure boats. They'd rent a yacht or a sailboat for the summer holiday and cruise out into the Ionian or Aegean, going where the winds took them. That summer, when it was time for the children to go back home, Marina's grandmother, the formidable Maro Lyris, designated the girl her protege. Maro had been closely observing the grandchildren and had settled on Marina as the one with the most potential. "She ordered me to stay," Marina says, or not ordered. "She offered me a carrot. She said, 'Stay for 3 more weeks and I'll teach you shipping.'" Maro's husband's shipping fortune, called Hadjipateras, and her father's shipping fortune, Lyris, both launched on islands in the Aegean Sea. Growing up female in the pious Greek Orthodox Lyris family in the 1930s, Maro was deprived of higher education. At 19, she consented to an arranged marriage with a member of an allied shipping family. Dutifully, she produced 4 children, John, Mark, Catherine, and Angela. Then, in her mid-20s, she turned autodidactic. It quickly emerged that she had a steel-trap mind for the near-infinite compendium of numbers that have defined shipping since the 17th century, from tonnage to nautical miles to tariffs to insurance rates. She left her husband, Marina's grandfather, in 1979 and moved into Rula's villa soon after. Summer after summer, Marrero singled out Marina to stay overtime with her at sea. Grandmother would tutor granddaughter every afternoon, teaching her about the global economy, the fair treatment of crew, and how to endure the devilish volatility of the shipping business. Maro kept screens showing the positions of all the company's ships, and still more screens showing relevant news. Quotation marks. Knowing her, she probably had her Bloomberg terminal on shipboard then, Marina jokes. She kept that thing close. Then in 2000, Mero's ex-husband died suddenly. With moral support from Rulo, whose real name was Irene Dambassis, she and her son John, Marina's father, started a new company called Dorian LPG. Together, they steered it from second-hand tankers to sea monsters with the term of art name, very large gas carriers, built in South Korea, most of them by H.D. Hyundai. When Mero's health took a downturn in the aughts, she and Rulo retreated to their hillside villa, which looks out on all of Athens. From there, Mero kept a weather eye on Dorian, the ports, and everything that flashed across her Bloomberg terminal. She died in 2012. Marina remembers the Rulo tears at the funeral. Her love for my grandmother was tangible. About the nature of Mero and Rulo's liaison, everyone in the family is circumspect. Marina's mother, Lydia Hadjipateras, describes Rulo as a very good companion and friend to Mero. Marina calls the relationship a way to embrace their own independence after marriage to men. The only mention of the couple online is in the Panama Papers, which reports that Mrs. Mero Lyris / Mrs. Irene Dambassis were intermediaries of something called the International Forest Center Corporation in 1989, the Panama Papers. What else should such a glamorous pair show up? To raise money for the massive new tankers, Marina's father, who became Dorian's chairman and CEO, a title he still holds, proposed something very nearly unheard of among family-owned shipping companies going public. Marina dove in. At 31, she helped lead the firm's in-house roadshow, raising $135 million. In preparation for the IPO, Marina also restructured the company, building departments that the family shop never had. Investor relations, human resources, finance. She further oversaw the brain-bruising work of making the books of a family firm kosher for regulators. On the morning of May 9, 2014, Marina stood on the balcony of the New York Stock Exchange. Without Mero, she was the sole woman in a cluster of men in dark suits, including her father and her two brothers, Alex and Peter. She wore a dark gray shift dress and simple gold jewelry. Today, unencumbered by marriage of children, Marina, who is known as something of a heartbreaker, could be forgiven for spending the rest of her life on her own superyacht. In a high-flying sinecure at Dorian LPG, hosting posh ship christenings in Athens where everyone knows her name. But this would be conservative. Instead, Marina settled in a two-bedroom on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, where people find her name both forgettable and unpronounceable. She also bought a farmhouse in Amagansett on Long Island. Soroya and she kicked off a raise for round one of a venture fund in 2017. 7 years later, TMV is closing its third fund and will enter the ranks of the $200 million VCs this year. Around us at Zephyros, kids in silverware clamor and motorbikes cough, but Marina's voice is barely above a whisper. When the hippopotamuses quarrel, then the frogs get stepped on, she says of geopolitical conflicts, including the war in Ukraine. She's sphinx-like at times. I'm starting to think she may have the rare quality that Fitzgerald's character called repose, a kind of physical self-possession seen only in people who lack neurotics, like the face-touching Marina never fidgets. And her soft voice is not shyness, I'm learning, She speaks in verdicts. Her straight brown, black hair, ballerina physique, and air of frankness brings to mind a Hellenic Frida Kahlo, but tactically reserved. Also sharing from our platters of tomatoes, tiramisu salata, and sea bream fish is the man Marina unfailingly calls Mr. Marcus, a proud figure who could only be described as looking like a sea captain. Constantine J. Markakis runs Dorian's Greek subsidiary. He's talking about how nation-states behave like their icons, Russia like a bear, England like a lion, and so on. The objects of Marina's words of derision this time are the other families from Unassiai, the island where the Hadjipateras mariners got their start. There are five original Onassian clans: Hadjipateras, Colacus, Limos, Lyras, and Pateras. And nearly three dozen illustrious families trace their fortunes to the island. In spite of these accomplishments, several of the Unassian diaspora, in Marina's view, have become hidebound in their approach to shipping, too slow to modernize and expose their fleets and finances to public scrutiny and investment. Marina's line of the Hadjipateras clan is, by contrast, progressive. Indeed, over 15 decades, it has pivoted unsentimentally from sail to steam, from steam to tankers, and from private to public. Marina's approach to social equity and climate action is also earnestly progressive. Dorian is known among seafarers for high wages, excellent benefits, and perks for its crews, including cruise-like ship amenities like gyms, karaoke, and onboard holiday celebrations. At TMV, Marina and her Sororia helped create Transact Global, a network for non-traditional fund managers, mostly women, so they can trade strategies, build solidarity, and gain greater access to capital. For the past decade, Marina has also served as vice chair of the Intertanko Environmental Committee. That's the International Association of Independent Tanker Owners, which was founded in Oslo in 1970 to address safety in shipping. Members of the committee, of course, are still in the energy sector, meaning fossil fuels. Parentheses, the LPG in Dorian's name stands for liquid petroleum gas, a natural gas that is better than coal, but far from green. Close parentheses. But perhaps to offset their guilt, they concentrate on emission reduction, alternative fuels, ballast water and waste management, ship recycling, anti-biofouling measures, and underwater noise reduction. The ship owners I meet later are now confident the industry will meet the United Nations demand that ship emissions, which account for some 3% of greenhouse gases, be reduced by 40% by 2030. In spite of this collective project, I encounter several shipping executives in Greece who talk as if they are above both the climate crisis and the affairs of humankind. "Who cares about Ukraine?" asks a well-heeled exec whose business has evidently been inconvenienced by the sanctions imposed on Russia since the war started. This small-mindedness profoundly displeases Marina, who nonetheless sidesteps most third-rail subjects, including Russia, China, and Gaza. We finished our espresso by the sea. Mr. Markakis is still talking. Marina's brother Alex seems ready to go. Marina is the visionary one, he says. At this, she neither gloats nor demurs. Instead, having made sure everyone at the table needs nothing more, She whispers in Greek to a waiter, the check. In the summer of 2004, when they were both undergraduates at Georgetown studying abroad, Marina and Soroya met in Fiesole, Italy. Though American, Soroya grew up in Minnesota, and Marina went to high school in Greenwich, Connecticut. Both women are bona fide cosmopolitites. At their first meeting, they drank limoncello and practiced their Italian. By the time they started TMV, which was originally called Trail Mix Ventures, they had already collaborated to invest in Figs, a producer of nurses' scrubs and other medical apparel. Founded by Heather Hassan and Trina Spear, Figs was then just a precocious startup. But Soroya and Marina saw at a glance that the market for good-looking scrubs, which at the time were both ugly and scarce, was vast. The company was a sensation. In 2021, Figs was the first company with two female co-founders ever to go public. It's now valued at more than $1 billion. Soroya, whom I once worked with at the New York Times Company, introduced me to Marina in October 2016. In TMV's temporary offices, Marina seemed kind but withholding. Her manner was so non-unctuous, in fact, so unsalesy, that I had a hard time believing she was suited for VC, which I associated at the time with yawping Twitter bullies, with Fleece with the Sandhill Sausage Party. In a transatlantic accent, Marina asked me considerate questions about my life. She also listened closely, listening also not a Sandhill hobby. But was she listening for something in particular? Could she have been trying in a way that went over my head to elicit something, maybe my assets, even the way the real operators do? When the tables turned, she told me she'd started at Ohio Wesleyan, transferred to Georgetown University, and then attended the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy to get her seaman's license. In her 20s, while based in Greece and South Korea, she worked all over the shipyards, doing sea trials with new vessels and learning her way around the engine rooms. As part of her training, she practiced putting out shipboard fires. Well, cool. Actually, holy S, but still no jargon. No, for the love of God, techno-optimism. Everything about Marina was hard to assimilate. The usual suspects in New York venture capital, Josh Kushner at Thrive Capital, David Tisch at Box Group, come from American families of investors. Their so-called high conviction bets tend to be bets on the conviction that, wouldn't you know it, their closest friends from childhood are all Thomas Edison. Well, folks, that wraps up this reading of the articles in the March and April issue of Wired Magazine. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. I will continue reading from it next week. This is your host, Howie Baum, wishing you a great day.